Hi everyone, I'm Greg Lowe from Down Under in Australia. Fabric Down Under is a production from SQL Down Under. It covers Microsoft Fabric, a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions and views expressed in the podcast are individual and don't necessarily reflect the opinions and views of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation. Introducing Show 9 with guest Devang Shah. Welcome. Our guest today is Devang Shah. Devang is a principal program manager at Microsoft with over 16 years of experience in cloud technology, customer success, and business development. He's led multi-million dollar Azure deals, engaged with strategic customers, and orchestrated teams of cloud solution architects, solution sellers, and technology strategists across multiple regions and cultures. His core competencies include creating clarity, simplifying complex patterns, creating mutually beneficial environments, and delivering value to customers, partners, and teams. He's passionate about helping customers benefit from digital transformation through adoption of cloud, IoT, and AI. Devang's also a startup mentor and coach, sharing his expertise and insights with aspiring entrepreneurs. So welcome, Devang.
Thank you so much, Greg. Happy to be here.
Indeed. Look, it must be coming off a bit of an exciting week for you guys with just coming from Ignite.
Indeed. This week has been super exciting. It was the week of Ignite in Chicago, where for the listeners, Microsoft organizes Ignite conference every November, normally in the later part of the year, where we bring in a number of different product announcements. Some products are announced into previews, some products are announced into GA, generally available. And it was our moment. So Fabric Real-Time Intelligence went generally available at Ignite. So it was super exciting. We got a lot of mentions from our leaders, also in media, analysts. And, you know, the simple fact is it is ready to use. So, and I'm here to tell you all about it.
Awesome. So look, I think we should start there. Is that like, why do I care about this? And so, I mean, I do, but I'd like you to tell people why do we care about real-time intelligence? And what is it that we can do with that we can't do, let's say, just with a database?
Yeah, that's a very valid question. That's a question we get quite often. So let's start from a why. And I'll prefer starting with an example. We have a lot of demands and a lot of requests from airports and airlines at this moment in time, ever since we announced real-time intelligence into public preview at our Build conference, which happens in May. What are the use cases they are coming up with? You know, you are a passenger, you go to the airport, you check in your bags, you drop off your bags, you get your boarding pass, you go to the security queue and, you know, get yourself checked, and then you end up at the gate. Now, at all these places, you may have seen there are queues, there is sometimes congestion, which adds to passenger frustration. Now, airports' ulterior intention is to have you spend more time in duty-free shopping, because that's where they generate revenue.
That is so funny you say that. I was hoping you weren't going to say it was about best things for passengers, because I've spent so much time in airports over the years. And if I look at Melbourne as an example with our international airport, as you go through customs, there used to be an area where you could cut straight through and it would take you straight through to the gate areas and things. Now they make you walk all the way out and then all the way back, but it's predominantly just to push you through duty-free shopping.
And it's not only about duty-free shopping. And yeah, you're completely right. It's also about, you know, how, you know, if people want to have meals, if you are with kids and, you know, kids get hungry, etc., you may have made a long trip to come to the airport. Mm-hmm. So they also want you to go to restaurants, because that's where also they can have you spend. And that's where also they can generate some revenue. But, you know, there are queues. There are queues at immigration. There are queues at security. There mm-hmm. are queues at check-in. So, you know, a lot of these airports want to collect this data as you are generating events through your interactions with the airport. For example, again, going back, when you check in, that's an event that gets captured in some kind of an IT system. When you go to the security queue, you know, there are cameras all over the place which are kind of monitoring passenger flow. So all this data is what they want to capture and analyze in near real time so they can start making better decisions. Do we have enough personnel at the security gates? Do we have enough people from the border control at the immigration counters so that, you know, they can manage the queues better? Do we have enough people to stop the check-in desk? And as you can imagine, airports are typically receiving thousands of flights every day, taking off, arriving, etc. So the amount of data that gets generated is immense. And if they can start analyzing this data and start making better decisions, they can optimize the passenger flow through the airport. They can improve experience for the passengers like you and me, and, you know, kind of entice us to go and spend more time in duty-free shopping and eat out at the restaurants. That definitely makes us feel better. But also, you know, that's where they generate revenue as well. So I think these are the kind of scenarios. I believe relatable use case for most of us, because most of us must have experienced this. So this is what we are seeing. This is how airports, for example, want to leverage real-time intelligence to make these better decisions. Now, you may ask, saying, weren't they already doing this? Now, are you telling me they don't do this at all? No, they have been doing this. They have been collecting data in some kind of a database management system or some kind of a data warehouse. And they have had their forecasting models. So they kind of see, you know, have a daily forecast or weekly forecast saying, hey, tomorrow we should have X number of people at the security gates because these many flights are going to arrive. But as you know, flight schedules can change in real time. Flights get delayed, you know, due to weather issues, due to traffic issues, etc. And that's when the forecast begins to fail.
Weather is probably the biggest unknown in that list, if I think about times I've spent in airports, where you'd think overall that most of the time it would be fairly predictable, the loads and so on through different parts. But yeah, as soon as you throw aircraft maintenance issues in there somewhere, or you throw weather in there, or things like that, all just can go very, very wrong.
Indeed. So, you know, spot on. All these variables, they bring a lot of these near real-time interruptions in their forecast, in their business operations, or in their daily operations. And if they could have this data available, and if they could process this data in near real-time, and start improving their forecast or start making those better decisions, they can optimize passenger flows. They can reduce the queue, you know, wait times in the queues, because that will add to a better passenger experience, and potentially you'll give them better satisfaction rating as well. Because nowadays, you may have seen, there are these buttons, you know, with smileys, etc., to say, hey, how did you feel at the airport? And many of us would start pressing the green button if we didn't have to spend a lot of time in the queue. So that's an example airport.
I'm not sure. It'd be interesting to see how many of the listeners have seen those, but it's there are a number of airports with the green and red buttons with the how do you feel about the airport, or are you happy, or things like that. That's good. In fact, the very first place I saw that was Singapore's Changi Airport, and the thing I really, really like about Changi Airport is that they are very focused on the passenger experience. The thing is, I find that is just the complete opposite of what happens in many other airports. You know, I look at they I think years ago decided they wanted to be a good port, and they've just gone out of their way to do everything required. You know, I mean, they were the first airport I went to had free Wi-Fi, for example, and you know, or like if you just wanted to go and sleep for a few hours, you know, somewhere or things. I mean, there were just so many things where if you go to Melbourne, people were sleeping all over the seats, right? So so then they've put armrests there to stop people sleeping. So now they sleep on the floor. You know, it's like it's just the complete opposite attitude. And so, I love airports that have the various bits of feedback. Do you think, though, the real-time intelligence part is helping them react more quickly when things go wrong?
Yeah, that's the kind of feedback we are getting. At least the airports and airlines who have completed POCs or proof of concepts or have been in production, they are able to make better decisions. They have, you know, some airports have reported they've been able to reduce wait times by a few minutes, by a few, you know, which is contributing eventually to the passenger experience. So we are definitely seeing some impact, some improvement. But we also need to give it some more time because we were in public preview in May. We went GA just like 2 days ago. So I think we will see more and more use cases coming through, more and more production implementations. You know, we have to give it some time for, you know, 2 to 3 months for, you know, the benefits to kick in. And then, you know, customers sharing those benefits with us, which we can then broadly share with the community. So we do believe these things are happening. Second thing I just also wanted to highlight is it's not only about being able to collect data and process data very quickly or in near real time. With Fabric Real-Time Intelligence, what we've also tried to do is focus on the self-service aspect. Now, we know data can be in variety of different disparate systems, have to be managed, or, you know, are a variety of different technologies, which makes it harder for non-technical end users or non-technical business users to kind of tap into that data and start, you know, using that data in a more more beneficial way. So what we have tried to focus on in Fabric Real-Time Intelligence is to create those self-service experiences. Now, if I was to draw a parallel, and I believe your listeners and community might be aware of Power BI. So just the way Power BI unlocked this whole self-service business intelligence possibilities, gave a lot of I would say flexibility, a lot of onus on the non-technical end users to start tapping into the data, start building their own reports, start building their own insights. We are doing the same with real-time intelligence and Fabric. Why should streaming data, near real-time data, continuously arriving data be out of reach for the non-technical end users? You know, we want to really unlock that so that, because we know, you know, data engineers, data architects, these skills are sometimes difficult to find, sometimes expensive, and not all organizations are able to afford them. Especially, you know, airports always are on tight budgets. Just as an example, so if we could unlock self-service analytics on real-time streaming data, I think that would unlock a lot more value for these organizations. So that's also the focus. That's what anyone who will try and build some kind of a solution with real-time intelligence in Fabric, you will see there is lots of focus on low-code, no-code aspects so that, you know, any non-technical end user or a business user can also build their own insights and own dashboards on that data.
That's actually very interesting because if I look at, you mentioned the data engineer type people, I would say 80% of their work that I see is usually involved in sort of transforming the data into a suitable shape and building models that do make it possible for people to do their self-service work. Because I see a nasty trend where there seems to be this expectation that if you just pick data up from the source and sort of drop it into the destination, that it's really, really good for people to then report off that. And most of the time, my experience is that's far from true.
And you're completely right. It is the case. I think our industry and talking about any vertical, we are all facing the challenges of a variety of different data formats, not many common standards. Sometimes you have very complex JSON arrays that are very difficult to navigate through. You have XMLs, you have CSVs, complex CSVs. We've seen all kind of formats. And that, of course, as you correctly pointed out, makes it very difficult. And that's why we need these data engineer profiles for them to kind of reshape that data, transform that data, clean up that data before that data becomes usable for any kind of non-technical end users or any kind of business purpose. So that is why in real-time intelligence, we have included some low-code, no-code capabilities where you can start, for example, expanding complex JSONs, loading complex JSONs into a relational a schema so that it becomes easier for any kind of non-technical user to start building reports. So, you know, they can simply, if I was to give you an example, if you have a JSON document with multi-level arrays or something, you can load that into a service in Fabric called as Event Stream, and we'll talk about what those different components are. In Event Stream, you can expand those JSON arrays. You can build some kind of aggregations as well. If you want to do some kind of time window analysis, saying, hey, I want to capture what's happening every 5 minutes based on my data, you can do this in a low-code, no-code, drag-and-droppy way. Have this data loaded into tables in Event House, and those tables can directly be connected to Power BI. And in Power BI, you can start modeling your data, start establishing relationships between data, different tables if you have to, and start building your own reports. Or you can model that data into a real-time dashboard, and then you can have a continuously refreshing real-time dashboard kind of giving you insights that you need. And beyond that, if you want to kind of complete the flow, we have also something called as Activator, which you can connect to a dashboard. So you can actually get alerted, because imagine if you build dashboards, if you build reports, yes, you can have analysts look at that data continuously or, you know, periodically, but you may miss an event. You may miss something that happened in your environment because you were potentially not paying attention or you were occupied with something else. So Activator kind of unlocks that scenario as well, where you can get alerted. You can generate an action on a downstream system or on a downstream workflow, so your business workflow does not get interrupted. So I think that's, you know, all these components that I talked about: Event Stream, Event House, Power BI, Real-Time Dashboard, or Activator. These have very strong UX or user experience components, a lot of low-code, no-code capabilities. So it becomes easier for even a non-technical end users or business users, or even for data engineers. If they want to use these capabilities to build some flows for their business users, it would work the same for them as
well.
Yeah,
so, that's right. If it's easier for them, they'll get more of it done anyway. So, yeah.
Indeed.
So yeah. Threw a few names around there, like Event Streams and Event House and so on. So perhaps we should talk about what those things are. So what do you consider an event stream?
So if you are familiar with Event Hubs in Azure or Stream Analytics in Azure, then what we've done with Event Stream is combine those two services. So Event Stream, think of it this as a high throughput messaging service, which can read from a variety of different sources. For example, it can read from Azure Event Hubs, IoT Hubs. It can read from Confluent Kafka.
Yeah, so you could still use an actual Event Hub as
Indeed.
Well. Yeah, I've always kind of liked Event Hubs because in addition, the fact that it had different modes, you know, like you could talk to it in a connected mode if you had lots of individual things flowing through, or you could establish a connection every time if that made sense and so on. So yeah, I've found them to be really, really important. And it's actually one of the things I've talked to the SQL Server team about for quite a while, is that I really would love, say, Azure SQL DB and so on, to be able to have really good integration with Event Hubs, you know, and so on. So to be able to push things into it, to pull things out of it, to process. But the beautiful thing is here, this actually does a lot of that just immediately. So
yeah, indeed. So also to give you for a little bit more, Event Stream under the hood is an event hub.
Yeah.
So when you create an event stream and when you create a custom application or a custom endpoint on an event stream, you actually get an Event Hub endpoint. So if you have an environment where you want to integrate Event Hub-like capabilities, then Event Stream also acts like an Event Hub, or it is under the hood actually an Event Hub. So
it's interesting when you say under the hood, is it accessible as an Event Hub as well?
It is under the hood and Event Hub. So if I'll now start going into a little bit more technical architecture, and if you don't mind, Greg, then since you mentioned you're familiar with Event Hub has had multiple SKUs, if you're familiar. There is basic, standard, premium, and dedicated. So in order to build this event stream more like a SaaS application or SaaS version of an Event Hub, what we've done is we've taken these dedicated Event Hubs, and created these like multi-tenant slices, which are being offered as event streams as part of Fabric experience.
Yeah.
So under the hood, they are event hubs. We are just offering you a slice of that event hub in a multi-tenant mm-hmm. fashion, so that you can only use for whatever purpose that you are intending to use it for. So under the hood, it is an event hub. When you actually create a custom endpoint, you will get an event hub endpoint, which is the same thing that you get when you create mm-hmm. an event hub in Azure. So that's number one. Event stream functions and behaves like an event hub because under the hood, it is an event hub. Number two,
it's a superset of event hub then in that case. And so what does it do that the event hub doesn't do?
Yeah, so let's get there. Event stream has, if I was to summarize, there are four core capabilities. So number one, it is an event hub. Number two, in Event Stream and Fabric Real-Time Intelligence, we have built a number of connectors. So for example, as I said, you can connect to some of the Azure-based services like Event Hub, IoT Hub. We announced a connector with Service Bus in preview at Ignite, so just 2 days ago. Beyond that, you can also connect to other cloud services. For example, if you are using AWS Kinesis or Amazon Kinesis, or if you have AWS Managed Kafka, or if you have Confluent Kafka, or if you have Apache Kafka, which you may be running on-prem or any other environments, EventStream can go and read data from those services as well. It can also read from Google PubSub. So we've also focused on trying to meet our customers and our users where they are. So, and we know multi-cloud is a reality. A lot of customers might be using different services. So we've built connectors for that. Additional connectors are for change data capture streams. So if you have Azure SQL database, MySQL database, PostgreSQL, Cosmos DB, SQL on VM, or SQL managed instance, Event Stream can connect to all of those and start capturing those change data capture streams and bring it into Fabric. So that's the second capability, bunch of new connectors.
I really, really like that because it gives me access to the events as they're occurring and so on. It's
indeed
one of the big pushes I'm seeing at the moment all the time in the Fabric world is they seem very excited about mirroring, the new implementation of the word mirroring. But that one doesn't excite me anywhere near as much because at the moment it gives you a copy of the source database. You don't have anything that tells you what data changed, if data changed, anything like that. And then the reporting, they're assuming it'll be built straight off that copy. And that's the thing I'm getting at is like, you know, for years we've been trying to get people not to do that. And so the thing that I like here is that this gives me access to the event stream that I can then do something sensible with. And importantly, I can do something incrementally.
Indeed. So those are the connectors, and we are continuously expanding this list of connectors. In fact, there is a form that my colleagues have put on LinkedIn, and I can share that with you later, and you can share it with your listeners as well, where we are actually collecting what other sources we should go and connect to. So what are the connectors we should go and build? So we are really trying to gather these inputs, gather these insights so that we can make the right investments that would benefit our customers. So that's the second capability.
Of course, Mark Brown's side of things, the Cosmos DB and so on, there's good integration with that sort of thing as well. So
Cosmos DB is already on the list.
With the data coming from the event stream then, so what do we do with it?
Let's go to the third capability, which is the stream analytics. So if you're familiar with Azure Stream Analytics, those features have been integrated into Event Stream. So if I was to break down Event Stream as a word, the event comes from Event Hub and stream comes from Stream Analytics. And that's why we call it as Event Stream. So you have the Stream Analytics capability. So all these events that you're getting from a variety of different sources, there is a low code, no code experience where you can start transforming these streams. You can do aggregations, you can do joins, you can do unions, you can change data types, you can change field names.
Aggregations and things too would then in that case be over windowed data as well.
Correct. So if you want to do time window analysis with hopping windows, sliding windows, those kind of scenarios, then all those are possible.
What's happened in the last 5 minutes? What's happened in the last minute?
Indeed. So that's capability number three. And capability number four is event stream also now natively connects to some of the destinations in Fabric. So you can directly write Delta tables in Lakehouse if that is your preferred destination in Fabric. If you want to write directly to Event House, and we'll shortly go into what are Event Houses and why they are important, it natively writes into Event House. But you may have a scenario where you may want to expose this data for an application to consume. So it also exposes an endpoint. So you can have some kind of a web application or some kind of a microservice that wants to consume data that Event Stream is preparing and connecting and getting from different sources. You also get an endpoint. And last but not the least, Event Stream also directly connects with Activator. Again, we'll go into what is an activator, but imagine a very straightforward scenario where you have streaming data and you want to start generating alerts based on that streaming data. You can directly go and do that with Activator. So these are four core capabilities of Event Stream. There are more, but let's focus on these four core four capabilities. And this is how you can see what's the difference between Event Hub, Stream Analytics, and Event Stream. So Event Stream, I would say, is a combination of Event Hub and Stream Analytics. We've tried to combine those capabilities, offer this unified experience, a SaaS experience, software as a service kind of an experience with a lot of low-code, no-code-driven capabilities so that it becomes easier to build these complex event streaming patterns.
So if you're connecting Activator directly to Event Stream, is that so we want to do alerting or detect things without actually storing all the events? Is that the...
Yeah, if you have a scenario where storage is... let me take that back. You can actually have Event Stream write to multiple destinations at the same time. Okay, so you can write your, for example, data into a Lakehouse as Delta tables, or you can write your data into an Event House, and we'll get to that. And you can also do alerting and activations using Activator on that event stream. So it's not that. So if you only use Activator as a destination, then yes, you will not be storing any data. Only all the data.
And there's scenarios where that makes sense.
Indeed.
Where you just want to know if something happened. Yeah.
Indeed.
Or actually, importantly, I think didn't happen is the other. It's actually one of my favorite things with streams that I wrote a blog post about the other day. In fact, that a lot of people never think about missing data as being super valuable. They focus on data that is there, but often data that isn't there is just as important.
Indeed, indeed.
Hi, this is Greg coming to you from another time and place. If you have a data-related project that needs to get off to a great start with the right architecture, or if you have an existing project that's off the rails, why not contact us? We help organizations of all sizes, from startups to tier one financials, and we can help you too. Check us out at sqldownunder.com.
What
like
I was
in your
say...
airport, if you were counting off people as they came out of a customs queue or something, and that stops, then then that's telling you something.
So, for example, you can build such a workflow in Activator. That, for example, if there is no data in last 5 minutes or last 10 minutes or et cetera, then you may want to get alerted saying, hey, either the stream or the source has stopped sending data or there is something malfunctioning. So you can also set up those kind of actions. And why we have focused on integrating Event Stream and Activator directly is sometimes there are scenarios where you want super low latency actions.
And that's it exactly. The super low latency as well. You want to know straight away rather than storing it and then querying it. Yeah. So.
Indeed. So that's Event Stream. Shall we go to Event House?
I think Event House is the next kind of interesting thing there. So.
Yeah. So Event House is a product.
A play on the word for lake house, obviously.
Indeed. We had to come up with a word that differentiates lake houses from warehouses and from event houses. So
I think it's good.
If you're familiar with Azure Data Explorer, which was a product in, which is a product in Azure, which
where
is
we
actually
have
built
KQL databases. Yes.
Indeed, indeed. So Azure Data Explorer, Event House are products which are built using a technology which was created in Microsoft. It's called Gusto. Gusto was created at Microsoft about 10 years ago. We celebrated our 10th anniversary in March this year. It's completely homegrown Microsoft technology. It was used internally from 2014 to 2019 before we made it generally available in Azure as Azure Data Explorer. And when we launched Fabric, we also introduced this technology into Fabric as Event House. Event House is a collection of KQL databases. So the individual instance that you will, in which you will load data, is a KQL database. And Event House is a collection of one or more KQL databases. As of today, Event House can host about 10,000 KQL databases. We haven't seen a lot of customers reaching that number yet. So, but you know, that's the possibility you have. Now, what is special about this technology? What is special about this product? Event House under the hood is a column store designed to handle this kind of high streaming, high granularity, low latency data. Because typically this kind of event data, time series data, you know, if you have time series data from mining operations, because I know Australia has a lot of mining companies or, you know, kind of any kind of manufacturing organizations, you have lots of this high granularity time series data, you know, things happening every millisecond, things happening every second. Some of the database systems today are prohibitively expensive in storing this kind of high granularity data. So you typically end up storing aggregates because...
It's interesting too. It tends to push the boundaries a bit of some of the existing technologies. Like I've done work for companies who do drilling, for example, and they'll have a separate database for each drill and... They might have 10 or 20,000 of those at any point in time. And it's really interesting if you've ever used SQL Server with 10 or 20,000 databases. The tooling doesn't love it you know, when you get to that.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's one of the only use cases I've ever come across where things like auto-close actually make sense because there'll only be two or three drills that are going on at once, and yet you've got 10, 20,000 of them. So you actually don't want all those database files open at the same time. And so, but yeah, what fascinated me is the amount of information that comes out of one of those drills as they're doing it. You know, they're sort of the whole time, you know, they're pushing fluids down and they're doing various chemical analysis and photo analysis and things, you know, of the stuff coming back out and so on. And oh my goodness, you know, it's just a constant flow of information.
Indeed. And I have a very interesting example to share with you, but I'll share that how much data we collected during something we did, you know, during an experience that we delivered at Ignite. And, you know, those numbers will be very interesting for the listeners. But we'll get to that. So if you focus on Event House, Greg, so as I said, it's a column store designed to handle this kind of high granularity data. It partitions data by default by time, so you don't have to think about partitioning. It indexes each and every column, whether it's an integer, whether it's a real, whether it's a double, whether it's a string. It is built with inverted text index as well. So if you have a kind of textual data, unstructured textual data that you want to capture, that you want to analyze, that you want to query, it can do that very well. It also has a dynamic data type as a column in which you can store an entire JSON document. And that entire JSON document, even with all the different arrays and key value pairs, is also indexed. So you can also go and query that type of data. So it's really designed for these kind of data sets, which are typically semi-structured or unstructured, and if you want to start querying them, then you can do that with Event House. So Event House is massively used at Microsoft today. Microsoft is one of the number one users of our own technology, ingesting close to about 300 petabytes every single day. So that's the kind of volume and scale Event House is designed to handle. So that's about that. Event House, if you want to start querying data from Event House, you have to use KQL.
That, do you, When you're building these sort of things, do you tend to still have like a bronze, silver, gold layer inside the event house?
That's a fantastic question. Yes, you can build bronze, silver, gold layers as well. Event mm-hmm. House has a capability, what we call it as update policies. Mm-hmm. Imagine you have Event Stream writing some raw JSON files into a raw table in Event House. Update. You can define an update policy. What does update policy do? Is basically it's going to accept source table as an input. Yep. You can define your query logic. How do you want to transform this data? How do you want to reshape this data? What do you want to do with this data? And for every new row that gets ingested into a raw table, this particular logic will be executed and the data will be loaded into a target table. And you can chain this up to as many different layers as you want. You can mm-hmm. go up to 5 or 6 different layers of transformation. For a customer in the UK, we've recently done that five-level transformation. So data moving from a raw table to a curated table to an aggregated table to two additional layers. So you can do that kind of chaining of data before your data is presented for consumption to your end users or business users. Mm. On top of that, Event House also has the capability of a materialized view. So you can also build materialized views, which will continuously update itself as the new data is flowing in. Typical scenarios are if you only want to focus on last known value, history is important. You want to maintain history because it may be relevant for audit tracking purposes, compliance purposes. You may want to kind of replay what happened in a particular scenario, then history is important. Mm-hmm. But for most cases, you may just want to focus on last known value. What is the last thing that happened in my scenario? So you can do that. You can do some deduplications. You can do some aggregations. So this is how you can also build materialized views. And you can build more than one materialized view on a single table as well. So mm-hmm. yes, you can build kind of this bronze, silver, gold, platinum, and multi-layer medallion patterns. I haven't heard that word a lot, but you can call it as a streaming medallion pattern, where your data is continuously streaming in and it's getting transformed, it's becoming available for querying. Because when you build this kind of a medallion pattern in Event House, you don't need any additional orchestrator. You don't need to start scheduling jobs. This transformations are happening as the data is arriving.
Is great. That's actually, look, the feedback I normally get from customers, if I look mm-hmm. at ADX and KQL database as a whole, the first thing is they're usually incredibly impressed with the speed of them mm-hmm. Over gigantic numbers of rows. The pushback I get, though, sometimes is on the storage costs. And that is one of the things that I sort of wonder about with the real-time analytics is we've got the ability now to ingest far more data much more easily. Is there anything that gives people like a way of managing the costs of storing all that data?
So that's an interesting feedback, and I would love to double click into that. So one thing that Event House or KQL databases do by default is compress all the data. And we have seen a compression factor of nearly 10 in many, many scenarios. So, for example, if you're ingesting 100 gigabytes of data or 100 gigabytes, it will be stored as 10 gigabytes. And what you pay as a customer or a user is for the 10 gigabytes, not for the 100.
Which is fairly common for sort of column store, effective column store style compression. Correct. Yeah, it's good.
Correct. And the under the hood, second thing is Event Houses, KQL databases, or ADX, they are all storing data on blob storage. Mm-hmm. So you're not paying a disk cost for storing your data. You're paying the blob storage cost, which is one of the cheapest storage all around in any of the clouds. So you are you're paying the blob storage price. So in case your customers are seeing that they have very high costs, those costs could be coming from transactions. So, we have to look at, and we're happy to follow up with you on that, is sometimes if you have a lot of frequent writes to the blob storage, then you have a lot of write transaction costs, which can actually then accumulate to become and show up as a storage bill or show up in your storage invoice.
I think they just get nervous because I know quite a few have an issue with, say, things like log analytics, where they're taking system events from large numbers of systems and pushing them into log analytics. Mm-hmm. And in those cases, though, most of the time I find where they've had a problem, they haven't overly well managed it, you know, so they don't, they haven't configured retention periods. They haven't configured possibly caps on things or just various things. And so, like, that's a good example, actually, in terms of what is there to clean up old data.
So any instance of Kusto, whether it's in Azure Data Explorer mm-hmm. or in Event House, you have something called as retention period. So you can define retention period per table or per database. And if you define it at the database level, then all the tables in the database automatically inherit that value. Mm-hmm. So you can define saying, hey, I just want to retain my data for 365 days. Then on the 366th day, we start cleaning up, exactly 1 year old data. So you can define those retention mm-hmm. policies so that you don't end up paying for data that you don't need to keep and you don't need to, you don't want to store. So
that capability. What we found in things that I've done with timber mills and things like that mm-hmm. is that instead of sort of just cleaning it up, what we tend to do is roll it up into higher level aggregates and things like that, and then store that rather than just deleting the data. So,
If you can, you know, of course you can do those aggregates as well and store those aggregates. But in case some customers don't need to keep any data beyond 1 year or 5 years, you can also start setting up those relevant retention policies and get the data cleaned up. So that would be ways. Now you mentioned something about log analytics, and log analytics, at some point of time becomes quite expensive, especially if you want to keep data for too long. And so log analytics uses a little bit of a different architecture compared to what you have in Event House. Yes, under the hood, it's the same engine. It's the same KQL capability. But for example, log analytics offers anywhere between 30 to 90 days of free included storage. And beyond 90 days, it becomes you have to pay for it unless you have some kind of a commitment tier. So we have seen a lot of patterns where customers use log analytics and Event House or log analytics and ADX as companion solutions. Mm-hmm. So ADX becomes your long-term data store. Because it's fairly cheap to keep data in ADX, but also it provides the same KQL querying capabilities. So from log analytics, you can query data from ADX without even having to change your screen, without even having to tab through a different window. Or you can query log analytics data from an ADX query interface. So you can do that. So this is a very common pattern we have seen with a lot of customers who want to offload some of their system events or logs or Defender logs or all kind of logs that they collect from different systems. When they want to offload them because they want to just keep them for some kind of forensic analysis or some kind of root cause analysis that may have, you know, some things that have occurred in the past, then they do that. So there's a pattern that we have seen in order to kind of lower the TCO of your observability solution that you may have built with log analytics, but you still want to keep the data for compliance reasons as well, and for, as I said, forensic analysis.
And the whole real-time analytics area, pretty much everything has REST APIs as well?
Indeed. So as I said, Event Stream also provides you an endpoint. So if you want to consume data directly from Event Stream, you have an endpoint you can consume from there. Event House also provides you a query endpoint, so you can also use that REST API endpoint to query data from Event House using KQL query language. There are SDKs available, so if you want to use SDKs like Java, .NET, Go, Python, Node.js, then all those SDKs are available if you want to integrate into your existing application. So yes, you can consume all this data using REST APIs.
Excellent. And so listen, Devang, that's pretty much bringing us up to time. Is there anywhere people will see you coming up or anything else you want to call out to people they should do?
Yeah, well, we haven't had a chance to talk about Activator, but maybe I can come back at some point and we can have a follow-up conversation.
In fact, the irony is we actually had a whole show about Activator where I had Will on a while ago. But the thing is, that was back in the early Reflex days, so I very much want to now talk about where it's at. So,
Yeah, so Activator went GA as well at Ignite. So that is something maybe you can have Will back again and have him talk about all the new capabilities and new experiences that have been built between last November and this November. Activator has really gone through a lot of improvements, a design overhaul, and I think it will be a really great conversation for the listeners to you know, listen to Will about what's happening with Activator. If listeners want to do more, I would say they can go to aka.ms/realtimeintelligence. That takes you to a variety of different resources.
Simple link. That's good.
Yep. It takes you to a variety of different resources on getting more knowledge about real-time intelligence. We have published a tutorial, which is on our docs page. You can simply search for real-time intelligence tutorial. You'll find that. It gives you a complete step-by-step guide in terms of what you can do. Something that we haven't talked about yet, but we also have something called as Real-Time Hub, which is a capability in real-time intelligence, which kind of works as a catalog of streams, makes it easy to discover the different streams of data that you may have in your organization, improves accessibility.
Indeed. One thing I will finally ask you about is just where are things at with learn content for real-time intelligence?
Awesome. That's where I was going next. So we have Learn modules as well on real-time intelligence. If you are interested in becoming certified, then we have also launched DP700 certification with applied skills. And real-time intelligence is one of those applied skills. So if you want to start following a learning path where you start with a tutorial, you follow some Learn modules, and then if you want to, you know, get yourself certified on real-time intelligence, you can definitely do that. So all those things are available.
Yeah, I noticed the new exam in this area where we had DP600, as you say, DP700 is now the one that has a substantial real-time intelligence component, which I think surprised quite a lot of people, actually. But I think it's very good that it's there.
Yeah, and another thing I just want to mention, if some of you are planning to go to the Microsoft AI Tour, which is coming to Australia, I think it's in Sydney, I think first or second
week
of
December. Sydney, I think next month, yeah.
Yeah. There is a real-time intelligence lab as part of Microsoft AI Tour, which will be delivered by one of my colleagues who's also based in Australia. Her name is Minnie.
Minnie
Walia.
Hopefully,
so she will be there.
I'll get Minnie on a show coming up soon. Hopefully.
Yeah, you should. So she can. So if you want to learn in person and interact with someone from the Fabric or real-time intelligence product team, then and if you're going to be at Microsoft AI Tour, that would be a good way to learn. On top of that, we are continuing to do these kind of enablement events, learning events. Minnie will be doing a lot more participation in different user groups that happen around Australia, you know, delivering sessions and labs on real-time intelligence. So we will continue creating those events and learning opportunities so that, you know, people can come and learn about real-time intelligence and start seeing what value it can add in their organizations.
Awesome. Well, thank you so very much for your time today.
Thank you, Greg. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me over, and looking forward to speak with you soon.